Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 2nd, 2020. South Sudan's former revenue authority boss says he is free to leave South Sudan.
But basically, the summary of the report is that I have been exonerated from any wrongdoing. All the allegations against me were found to be false.
And rebels with the National Salvation Front free more than 20 civilians.
All these family members who are away, no one could tell us whether they are alive. It was really a hard situation. It was not easy for us to really move and also interact with the people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Kenya, where Kenyan security forces launched a manhunt today in coastal town of Lamu after gunmen sprayed a passenger bus with bullets, killing at least three people and injuring three others. Lamu County Commissioner Irungu Macharia said the bus had two other buses behind it, along with a police escort. When officers responded, the 10 or so attackers ran away into the heavy forest that lined both sides of the road from Mombasa. Rahel Ombor reports from Nairobi.
Three people were confirmed dead after suspected Al-Shabaab militants sprayed bullets at a bus ferrying passengers from Mombasa to Lamu County at the Kenyan coast. The incident happened on the Lamu-Garsen Road in an area called Nyongoro, which is heavily forested on both sides of the road. Lamu County Commissioner Irungu Macharia confirmed the fatalities and said three others also were injured in the attack and transferred to nearby health facilities. Speaking to VOA, Macharia said police have yet to establish the identity of the attackers.
There was that attack on the road, they attacked the bus along Malindi Ramu Road. Yes, they fired at the bus and we lost three lives. That one, you can't verify, unless they claim responsibility. But as far as we know, they could be bandits or anybody else. They could even be those terror groups or anything, but we cannot say for sure who they were.
He said the bus that was attacked was in the company of two other passenger buses and had a police escort, hence the quick response by the security personnel.
There was a bus that was ahead, it was fired at. Then they stopped two others, but the one that they shot at was the one that was leading the rest. Yeah, then our officers came because the buses had the escort. So the officers came and responded to the distress and the attackers ran away. But we are searching for them in the forest.
Macharia says the attackers numbered about 10. Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for previous attacks on vehicles traveling between Lamu and Mombasa. Most cars and buses using the road now travel with a security escort, which is a government requirement. Macharia says the government is in pursuit of Thursday's attackers.
We have an operation in the forest trying to see whether we can get the bandits, but at least the operations on the road have returned to normal. We have escorted the buses and traffic is flowing.
In 2011, Kenya sent its troops to fight Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The Islamist militants groups began launching attacks in Kenya soon after. The militants have built a cross-border network, radicalizing and recruiting youth to fight in Somalia and carrying out attacks within Kenya. The largest attack, an assault on Garissa University College in 2015, killed nearly 150 people. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The rebels of the National Salvation Front says they have freed nearly two dozen people, including 11 children, who were taken hostage during an attack on a South Sudan People's Defense Forces post in Yei River State. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Lodio Jumani says his brother's wife and four children were taken captives by NAS forces following recent violence in Kulipapa.
It was a worse and frustrating experience, a very stressful festive season so far in my family. After seeing into it that in the last 2 weeks, all these family members were away, no one could tell us whether they are alive. It was really a hard situation. It was not easy for us to really move and also have interact with the people, because all the time we always think about them.
Jumani says his family was overjoyed to see their loved ones returned unharmed.
There was happiness that was accompanied by tears. We actually become happy because they were brought back.
Jumani says most of the freed captives are weak and tired after their ordeal of walking for long distances and not having enough food to eat. But he says he is grateful to the International Committee of the Red Cross who facilitated the release and the rebels for freeing his relatives. The NAS, which refused to sign the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement, released a statement today confirming it captured several people. The rebel group says the citizens were under their protection since renewed fighting broke out between its forces and government soldiers in Kulipapa, some 14 kilometers outside of Juba. NAS spokesman Suba Samuel says most of those released are women and children.
We took them and we protected them because the offensive was throughout and our forces are mobile, and there was no way we can immediately hand them over to ICRC. So we kept them in the safe locations and till we are able to bring them all together in one place. And then on the 31st, we had a long discussion with the SRC on how they can come and take these people, and the operation was conducted successfully.
The group did sign a cessation of hostilities agreement with the government in 2018, but the two have since accused each other of carrying out offensives on each other's bases. The NAS says if genuine peace is to come to South Sudan, a new peace agreement must be reached which addresses the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan. Suba says the NAS respects international human rights laws.
The NAS Code of Conduct, the Military Code of Conduct, calls for National Salvation Front forces to respect human rights, to respect non-combatant during engagement. So we are aware of the laws of the war. We are aware of the engagement laws.
Suba says NAS will not be part of the current peace agreement unless President Salva Kiir steps down and the people decide whether to return to the country's original 10 states or to approve of more states.
Even if the government of national unity, it will also collapse as how the agreement collapsed. First of all, when they agreed, they gave themselves 8 months. This 8 months went without nothing. They gave themselves 6 months. This 6 months went without nothing. They gave themselves 100 days. This 100 days went without nothing.
The released civilians were held from late October through December. Suba says his group will continue to fight even if the signatories to the revitalized peace deal form a unity government next month. Florian Bastian Serex, head of communications at the ICRC in South Sudan, confirmed the release of 23 civilians, including 11 children.
This release and this operation came following a request from the National Salvation Front, from NAS, and they requested from us to facilitate this release, which we did. So we managed to bring the 23 persons to Juba after we checked that their health status was good enough to handle the trip. Now we are helping them to get in touch with their relatives. We are providing them accommodation, food, and we will help them to go back to their home.
Serex says the ICRC is feeding and housing the 23 while they help them get in touch with their relatives. South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lul Rai Kwong says he has yet to receive any official notice about the release, but it is, in his words, a good gesture in a way. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudan's Ministry of Finance says the former head of the South Sudan Revenue Authority, who was fired and later banned from leaving the country, has been cleared of any wrongdoings. The Ghanaian economic expert is calling on the government to take action following the release of an investigative report. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan's current finance minister, Salvatore Garang, fired Olimpio Atipo in August after the Ghanaian was accused of corruption. Atipo was fired 1 month after he revoked a huge tax exemption for a multi-million dollar construction company called Rack Research Group, an exemption Garang approved. The exemption would have allowed the company to import factory service equipment, medical items, fuel, agricultural items, petroleum products, construction materials, and food worth more than $491 million. After seeing a flood of comments on social media about the Iraq exemption, Atipo looked into the matter and learned the exemption request came directly from Maikai, the minister in the office of the president, who sent his June 14th request to the Minister of Finance. That same month, Atipo accused finance ministry officials of receiving cash payments from the revenue authority, saying, quote, "Some may be eating this money, who knows," end quote. Shortly after Atipo made that statement, Garang appointed two committees to investigate the former finance minister. In a December 27th letter to Atipo, Garang said that after talking to stakeholders and South Sudan leaders, he was, quote, "pleased to inform you that you are free to stay or travel to any destination of your choice at any time you wish, including your home country," end quote. Atipo tells South Sudan In Focus Garang's investigation found no evidence that he stole any government money. Allegations leveled against Atipo in public months ago.
He finally issued a letter clearance for me to move around to travel based on the recommendations in the report, which was submitted to him a few weeks ago by the investigating committee. The report is over, but basically the summary of the report is that I have been exonerated from any wrongdoing. All the allegations against me were found to be false.
Atipo says the committee recommended that Garang pay his rent and dues, including salaries, for the period he was under house arrest, but says the letter makes no mention of those points.
For the past four months, since September up to now, I have not been paid. And when I'm in the house, nobody has provided me anything. I have to look for money from somewhere to feed myself under this condition in Juba here. For all these men. So even if I want to travel now, how do I travel? The ministry has to give me a ticket to travel.
Atipo says he wants to see appropriate measures taken by the government since his removal by the minister was unlawful.
But the critical issue is that decision needs to be taken on that report, because the report now is going to generate serious legal issues. Because there is no basis for the action which has been taken. It shouldn't have happened before.
Atipo did not elaborate on what he meant by serious legal issues, or if he intends to sue Garang personally, but is calling on the government to make the report public.
So people can ask relevant questions as to what actually happened for us to get to where we are now. So for me, I am very happy that at least for now, I know that I have not done anything.
A report published late last year by a UN Nations panel of experts said a private account purported to have been opened by Atipo in Mombasa to divert public funds was actually a debit account, meaning no one can withdraw cash from the account. South Sudan In Focus contacted South Sudan government spokesperson Michael McQuay and press secretary for the office of the president at Atenyuek Ateny. Neither official answered their phone. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan In Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Cameroonians are returning home after fleeing the restive English-speaking region. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best item you have ever purchased?
The best item I have ever purchased was my former car, Peugeot 406. It was very good and I enjoyed the AC and it was affordable, so I really enjoyed it because it assisted me a lot.
The phone, and it's best for me because of its durability, and that's a Nokia phone that has lasted for so long.
My shoes. I love the shoes. I wasn't expecting it to last long, but I've been using it for long now and it lasted than I expected. So I feel I bought it at a good price and lasted as I wanted.
Took out money to buy this dress, and the dress is really versatile. I can wear it anywhere, and it was a good purchase to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan. Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Cameroon has received the first group of returning asylum seekers and former rebels who had fled to Nigeria to escape separatist conflict in Cameroon's western region. But the group of 87 refugees say they want assurances that peace has returned before they will go back to the troubled English-speaking regions. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
A chartered plane from the Nigerian city of Lagos landed at Yaoundé's international airport late Tuesday with 87 Cameroonian asylum seekers and former separatists on board. The group of mainly women and children is the first to return to Cameroon after fleeing to Nigeria to escape fighting between government troops and separatists in Cameroon's troubled western regions. Cameroon authorities say they returned voluntarily under an agreement with Nigeria and that at least 700 asylum seekers and rebels are expected to return before the end of February. 29-year-old Marie Nash fled the English-speaking southwestern town of Mamfi 2 years ago when fighting first broke out. But she decided to return amid renewed talk of peace.
Because of the war, I have experienced a lot of things. I just thank God because they want to bring peace to Cameroon, and I'm very happy for that. I want everybody to come back so that we should not fight again. Let us make peace.
Among the returnees are former separatist fighters like Success Nkongo, who led an armed group called Ground Zero before he fled to Nigeria in October. He decided to return to Cameroon shortly after the government showed efforts to address the conflict, he says, including holding an October national dialogue.
Prior to the national dialogue, I was invited, though I didn't come then. Today I'm here with other combatants and refugees, asylum seekers. We have come home and we wish to say, please, kindly give us another chance.
Former rebel Leonard Nyambere says he is still in touch with separatists who want to surrender but do not trust authorities' offer of reintegration.
Some of us think that the government wants to trick us or to kill us. That's why most of our brothers are still in the forest. My friend and my brothers understand that the Cameroon of yesterday is not the Cameroon of today. Everything cannot be solved by gun.
Other separatist fighters on social media described Nyambere and Congo as sellouts to Cameroon's government and have called for their capture. The former rebels will enter rehabilitation and reintegration programs before being released. Despite the risk and ongoing conflict, Cameroon authorities are urging the asylum seekers to return to their homes in the English-speaking western regions. Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji says there is peace in areas where they have been distributing aid with no attacks from separatist fighters.
It is a clear indication that there is no humanitarian crisis in Cameroon. I think about 5,000 families have gone back to the northwest and southwest region, which is a clear indication that things are coming back to normalcy.
But the returnees are staying with relatives in Yaoundé and say they are reluctant to go home until all fighting ends and authorities reconstruct villages and towns destroyed in the conflict. In December, Cameroon's parliament gave special status for the English-speaking regions in a further effort to halt the conflict. The special status creates more elected local leader positions for the two English-speaking regions. It also cedes some powers to elected mayors, such as authority to recruit hospital staff and teachers. Unrest erupted in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2017 after teachers and lawyers protested discrimination by the country's French-speaking majority. Cameroon's military cracked down hard as separatists took up arms. The UN says the conflict has left at least 3,000 people dead, dispatched 500,000, and led tens of thousands to flee to neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
After more than a decade of rapidly expanding their investments in African nations, Chinese businesses and other officials are showing signs of slowing the pace of growth. Some are making noise about corruption and stalling on some projects. Today in our series on China's role in Africa, Darren Taylor in Johannesburg looks at this hesitation.
In South Africa, nearly 30% of workers are unemployed, and the rand is down more than 30% from a year ago. The almost total collapse of the state energy provider, Eskom, is a big contributor to the economic weakness. China lent Eskom $2.5 billion last year, but the country's ambassador to Pretoria, Lin Songxian, has referred to the utility as a debt trap. David Lewis, an economist and the director of South Africa's Corruption Watch non-profit, says Lin's comments are highly significant.
In the case of the Chinese, it's rendered all the more significant by the fact that state-owned Chinese companies have not been absent in the state capture story in South Africa.
Government critics say under former President Jacob Zuma, some individuals and corporate interests encouraged state policies that allowed them to milk the profits from state-owned businesses, a practice known as state capture. In Kenya, Chinese business interests indicate they have doubts about the new Standard Gauge Railway, or SGR, intended to link the port of Mombasa with Uganda. Two sections linking Mombasa to the town of Naivasha, northwest of Nairobi, are finished with Chinese funding. But China won't lend Kenya the almost $4 billion it needs to build the final track to the Ugandan border. Kenyan economist Anzetse Were has been following the SGR saga closely.
That third phase has been put on hold because of, I think, a lack of alignment between what the Kenya government wanted and what the Chinese government was willing to finance.
She says a major concern is the SGR's high cost, more than $5.5 million per kilometre of track. That's almost three times the international standard and four times the original estimate. Chinese officials and Kenya's railway operator did not respond to requests for interviews on the matter. But Kenyan officials have said its loans from China will be worth it when the SGR is completed, as it will spark economic development. Given concerns that the railway is overpriced, Were says it's not surprising that China has decided not to fund the final phase. For now, instead of building the new railway from Naivasha to Uganda, Kenyan officials say they'll upgrade the existing older line. Were thinks Kenya's leaders must be held responsible for the project's delays because they borrowed too much without a detailed, transparent repayment plan.
It is absolutely, in my view, unacceptable that a government can get into such significant debt and the general public has no idea what's going on. That, to me, is not a problem of the Chinese government. The Chinese government is not accountable to the Kenyan people. It is the Kenyan government that is accountable to the Kenyan people.
Examples such as the Kenyan Railway and South Africa's Eskom have some Chinese business people saying Africa is becoming less attractive. A leading Chinese businessman in Johannesburg, who spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity, says Beijing's officials in South Africa are concerned that the government doesn't seem to have a structured plan to revive the economy. As a result, some Chinese business people are leaving South Africa, says banker Erwin Pon, also head of the Johannesburg Chinese Association.
The key thing is what return they can get and the cost associated around that. And I've seen them go wherever the opportunities really are. And I see a lot of them actually going to Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia is the area that's really developing, low cost, etc. So
he says a lot of Chinese have returned to their homeland or moved to Australia, the United States and Britain, where they expect to find better opportunities in established markets. Some are looking at other parts of Africa for investment. China remains South Africa's largest trade and investment partner. Beijing loaned African governments and businesses more than $30 billion last year. As the Chinese Business Insider says, if Beijing turns off its cash tap, South Africa's economy will no longer be in big trouble. Instead, it will implode. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
2019 saw a disease that is totally preventable claim the lives of more than 140,000 people, mostly children and babies, all because they missed getting two doses of their measles vaccine. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that unvaccinated children created a pathway for measles outbreak globally.
Samoan parents never expected to face such grief.
I was shocked. It was very hard for me to accept what happened.
It's very hard to lose a child. She's gone and I never forget her the way I try to teach her how to talk.
Measles claimed the lives of more than 80 Samoans, mostly children and infants.
Two shots of a vaccine could have saved those children's lives.
The vaccination rate in Samoa dropped to about 30% after two children died from a measles vaccine that was mixed with a muscle relaxant instead of water. Parents panicked, and anti-vaccination activists convinced them to avoid the vaccine. Then measles exploded on the island.
The hospitals and health clinics were overrun with very sick children. And there weren't enough healthcare workers and hospital beds to adequately deliver the services that they needed.
The Samoan government started a massive vaccination effort. It then turned to the CDC for help.
CDC also was asked to do training of healthcare workers to ensure safe vaccine delivery, as well as to monitor the quality of the immunization campaign that took place.
In 2019, more than 400,000 cases of measles were reported globally, with an additional 250,000 cases in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In the first 3 months of 2019, the number of measles cases tripled over the same period last year.
The main reason for failure to vaccinate against measles is families, communities are not having access to the vaccine.
Two doses of the measles vaccine will protect children from the disease. Yet conflict and poor health systems in low-income countries prevent families from vaccinating their children. In rich countries, vaccinations are declining too. Some parents are opting out of immunizations. The United States tops the list with 2.5 million children missing their first dose of the measles vaccine. In 2019, the CDC reported that more than 1,000 cases of measles in 31 states by late December, the highest number in 25 years.
Then in the United States now, we've got measles outbreaks and epidemics are becoming a new normal in this country after we've eliminated measles in 2000.
The WHO took away the measles eradication status of four European countries because of outbreaks and their low immunization rates.
In other words, we're backsliding.
Samoa concluded its state of emergency just before 2019 ended. But the resurgence of measles remains a global health problem. Unless children get vaccinated, there will be more deaths and more measles outbreaks in 2020. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Dudu by Sultan Clinton. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ah, do 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 do